Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Wake up to something different on Sunday mornings by joining me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz. The finest in modern jazz, from hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz every Sunday morning at 9 on Sheffield Live. 93.2 FM.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what, I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3, here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
To boldly go where no man has gone before.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk, and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
Listening to The Film Show with me, Denise.
And me, Martin. It just occurred to me with our intro that we do every week and have done for getting on for 8 years now, if you take out the 4 years when we weren't on here. But do you ever listen to the News Agents podcast with Emily Maitlis and John Sopel?
And
when they have their music come on, they fade and go, "Hi, and you're with John and Emily and Lewis." excuse me? Hello?
Are you saying they're ripping you off?
Us off. You should be angrier.
I'm a latecomer.
Yes, well. Right then. I've just remembered. Oh, no, I'll do the trailer trash bit that I just remembered and put on the schedule at the end. Yeah. So, right then.
We've got a different kind of trash.
Yes.
And you sent me this and I was like, what the heck is this?
Oh. Right. If you're interested in buying a special edition Blu-ray, how much would you spend on it? What's your limit?
Well, what am I going to get?
Well, if you want to buy a special new super duper documentary about the making of Aliens entitled Aliens Expanded, there's a whole bunch of different versions of it you can get. Now, this is coming out, I think, in about June or July this year. And it's a documentary, which is about the making of the film.
Did you clock the running time that they said the documentary is?
I didn't.
Is it 4 hours? That can't be right, right? Is it?
If you've seen different bits, because I must say, there is a five-hour documentary on the making of RoboCop.
Oh, amateurs then, amateurs.
Called RoboDoc. Did you see what they did there?
See what they did there.
Is in four separate parts. And I must say, if you like RoboCop, it's great.
Yeah.
But the problem with Aliens Expanded, as it's called, is, you know, it's bound to have James Cameron in it. all of the actors seem to be in it, apart from Bill Paxton, who sadly passed away a few years ago, and
the other sort of kind of key name in the
Aliens franchise. You thought I had something to say? Yeah. What's her name? I can't remember.
Oh, Sigourney Weaver. She's not in it.
Which opens up a whole Pandora's box of questions. Anyway, we're getting back to like how much would you pay for this? You can have just a digital version, and I think that's just about that's $50 though.
I could do $50
if you want the Blu-ray package.
Do I get a T-shirt?
Not yet.
Oh, okay. Right. Okay.
If you want the Blu-ray package, which is I think a postcard, a poster, and a digital version, that's $99.
100, yeah.
T-shirt, Blu-ray, digital download, yada, yada, yada. And that's about $140.
I mean, this also, is this like a funding, like a GoFundMe type affair or?
I don't know. No, this is, I mean, it's all been done, hasn't it? So
it's all.
Can I finish this part?
Yeah.
Because there's still more to go, unfortunately.
Carry on with the shopping channel.
You sound
options.
So weary there. Or you could have the associate producer package, which is the DVD, the digital download, the poster, the T-shirt, the underpants.
And a cigar.
And you will get a credit on the credits of the Blu-ray as an associate producer. And that's $2,500.
Okay.
Hang on. There's more. If you want to get a producer credit, you can whack out $5,000 and get that bada bada yada 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 yada. $5,000 and you get a producer credit. And if you really want to splash out, if you really want to show how much you love Aliens, you can get an executive producer credit.
A packet of cigars and the rest.
Your name on the credits as an executive producer, and that's a measly $10,000, which is the one that I've plumped for.
Oh, have you? Yes. Is that for my birthday?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, you're so kind. There's one born every minute. It looks like a shopping channel, like cash in. What the?
And they all look old.
Well, they must be a bit desperate as
it's
well.
It's 40 years ago knocking on for 40 years ago, isn't it?
So do you think, seriously though, do you think like for a fan of the franchise, they'll get a lower option and like it? Does it look good?
I have no idea if this is available in shops. I mean, it's a region-free Blu-ray, so you could send for it from this country and it will play on your machine if you just want the DVD or just the digital download.
It looks
even
like the Shine shopping of Blu-ray world. The advert, like, what will you actually get in the post?
There's a feeling of desperation with it, but I think the thing that would make me want to buy it and maybe even get the executive producer credit is if the tea lady at the Shepperton Studios, this is an apocryphal story. We had loads of bust-ups, Cameron, didn't he? Because they always wanted a cup of tea. And there's a story that he had a row with his tea lady.
It was like a battle of wills, wasn't it?
And I always imagine that she would have been like Irene Handel. Like, "Cooey, tea, everyone! Jimmy, do you want a cup of tea?
Cut!
Get that woman upset! Oh, would you like a biscuit with that, Jimmy?" And if she was going to be in it, telling her side of the story, I'd be there, £10,000.
You'd be it.
Executive producer. Otherwise, I think I might be able to live without that.
We'll go without.
Yeah.
We'll go without.
That's that one killed. Martin Scorsese.
Love the man.
He's pushing. I'm running out of patience with him now.
Yeah. Well, I love his enthusiasm. I love what he genuinely does as cinephile and preserving film. Great. But the last 10 years, I just can't be made to sit down and watch 3 hours of.
You didn't do Killers.
I kept putting it off, and yeah.
Or sometimes call it Flowers of the Killer Moon, but at the end of the day, it don't matter.
It might be one of those things though, where I come back and watch it a few years' time and go, "Oh, that's really good. I should have watched it at the time." But it's just I have a bit of.
You want to do is like watch it on something like Channel 5, where there's all the adverts in between. So it's on for about 6 hours, you know.
He's useful this week then.
He's announced a long gestating project of his to do a biopic of Frank Sinatra.
Has this been going since like the 70s or when?
I think he was going to do it about 15 years ago, but you'll never guess who's going to be in it.
I don't need to guess.
Yeah.
It's going to be.
Yeah, no, I don't need to get real. Yeah.
Is it definite going ahead?
Well, as definite as anything with Scorsese can be, because apparently he is about to start work on a new film based on a novel by the Japanese writer Shusaku Endo, who wrote the novel that Silence was based on, which nobody went to see. And it's about the life of Jesus. And I've got to say, Scorsese's religious films, like Kundun, although I did quite like The Last Temptation of Christ.
Yeah.
I wish he'd make something like King of Comedy or After Hours again, you know?
And I thought that wasn't the sticking point before that Sinatra's family have the rights and weren't.
Apparently, he has agreement from Sinatra's daughter, not Nancy, another one, to go ahead with a project. But at the moment, they're saying his new film about the life of Jesus, which he says is only going to be 80 minutes, is his. And then I'm sure he's in discussions with Netflix, Apple, Disney to get the huge amount of money that he's going to need to do a biography of Sinatra. But I don't know. No. You'll be on for days, won't it?
Maybe it'll be the one that brings me back.
I'm tired of talking about it already.
What's next?
No, I didn't mean it to be. I just feel wearied by it. Oh, no. And, we'll get all these fans. Oh, and here's Leonardo as Frank Sinatra.
Oh, it's nice when directors have a relationship with an actor and they... Yeah. But I'm sick of that one.
I just think they've been feeding off each other for like 20-odd years now, you know. DiCaprio gets the kudos for making a Scorsese movie. Scorsese gets the money because he's got DiCaprio in his movie. It's just incestuous. Anyway, moving rather briskly along.
Swiftly on to another favourite of ours.
I was so pleased to hear this. Go on.
Mr. Quentin Tarantino.
Always so cool. He's a brilliant director, you know.
Now, don't forget, he said, I'm only doing 10 films.
Only doing 10 films?
Except Kill Bill is... Sometimes one film, sometimes two films.
Yeah.
So a bit like that Doctor Who, how many lives has Doctor Who got? And then he just keeps adding extra ones.
Yeah. And he never counts his segment of Four Rooms as one of his films. That never gets a mention.
I always think of Kevin Klein in A Fish Called Wandering. That one doesn't count. That was a draw. So he has now abandoned plans for... the film that he'd announced, The Movie Critic.
He'd announced it quite a while ago, hadn't he? This was going to be his big farewell, his big adieu to the movie, which I think would have just been a load of cinematic anecdotes and things. He would have then said, I made all this up, and harking back to his days as, dear, the video shop.
When he watched all the stuff that he ripped off.
Yeah. Anyway, that movie is on ice, and we'll just have to hear where his amazing imagination and writing skills are taking him next.
Do you think maybe he wants to, he's made this commitment to just do 10, and he's said what this is going to be the last one, and he's just like, I want to do something different.
Yeah. I think he's hoping if he leaves it long enough, people will just forget it.
Or start to count Kill Bill as 2.
Yeah. Or you can count, I don't know. You can try and say that the others are actually, you know there's Inglourious Basterds and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, or one film.
Oh, God, don't remind me of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
There's people screaming at us at home.
I know.
Because we're saying this.
I know.
Well, maybe
so
one or two
bad.
People.
It was so wrong.
Thank you.
I
like it when you're emphatic like that. And that's the sort of thing I say, I can't say that, because people would say you're too opinionated. You can get away with it. And I'm just going to... We've got a small piece of trailer trash, which only came to me as I walked into the studio today. They've remade The Crow.
Haven't they done that already? Have I? No?
Did I miss that? No, apparently not. But there was a... You know, if any of you have seen The Crow or are fans of The Crow, you will know it's a pretty good... sort of action film set in a dystopian near future in a dirty urban environment where it rains all the time, and it's very gothic, it's grungy. And it was really good because they cut out a lot of the schmaltzy stuff and just got on with a load of action. Now, the downside of this was they could do this because his star, Brandon Lee, died while they were making the film. And there was a lot of stuff they had to cut back, and they literally cobbled it together with, if you watch it now, pretty rough and ready computer-generated images. Sometimes it's a double.
It was on set that he died,
wasn't
it? It was
Oh, God. I don't know if Alec Baldwin was on set at the same time,
Martin.
As well. But I've got to mention him later on in the show as well, so I'll leave it. But it was great, and it's action-packed. It's gone on with it. But they've made a new version, and I think it's Bill Skarsgård, more of whom later.
Okay, yeah.
From the great Skarsgård family enterprise. Skarsgård clan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It looks clean. It looked too clean to me, where the original looked just really rough and dirty, and you know. So we shall see. But I think that's out in May.
Oh, good.
So that's it from me for trailer trash.
But you've picked us some music this week, haven't you?
Yeah, you've got to do the rest of the talking on this week.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Am I? Okay.
Right.
Well, you've picked us some quite an exciting theme of tracks. And some of these songs I have heard before and some I haven't.
Oh.
I'm very excited to hear your first choice.
Okay. Well, this week I'm going with something called Film Star Jukebox. Film stars singing. Sometimes these are from entire albums that they've made. And it's a selected track from those pieces of work. And to start off with, Scarlett Johansson. Now, she's contributed to a number of films with songs in that. But this is an entire album that she's done. And, I mean, what would you expect Scarlett Johansson to do if she was going to do...
Well, not... What I heard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you expect to be, I don't know, she's going to be like the next Taylor Swift or something. Yeah. I don't know if you've heard of Taylor Swift.
She's reached me, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
But what she has done is made an album of Tom Waits cover versions.
I just couldn't, you could have knocked me down with a feather when I
And I've got this. To say, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
So, this is Scarlett Johansson from the album Wherever I Lay My Head. And this is I Don't Want to Grow Up.
Yeah.
You're listening to Denise and Martin on the Film Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM, online and on digital. And that was Scarlett Johansson, I Don't Want to Grow Up, a Tom Waits cover. Do you want to hear my Tom Waits?
I'm bursting here waiting to hear it.
I used to work in a record shop and we did records, so that dates it a bit. And there was this covers album called Red Hot and Blue, and Tom Waits was one of the contributing artists. And somebody bought back the record because it must be faulty on no other track but Tom Waits's, because it must be at the wrong speed. What the hell is this music? They'd never heard it before, and they were just like, they thought it was so odd to them that it must be faulty.
I hope you publicly shamed them and then told them to leave your shop immediately.
That's a lovely cover, because I love a cover that is nothing like the original. Yeah. And that is...
I would love to hear him and her do a duet, because there's a, because the soundtrack album to One From the Heart, Waits does a number of duets with Crystal Gayle, and you wouldn't think that those two voices, you know, and there's some beautiful numbers on that.
It's not unthinkable that Scarlett Johansson could appear on film with Tom Waits, is it?
Yeah, well, he acts, doesn't
Let's
he?
Let's make so, it happen.
Yeah.
Let's make it happen.
Let's do it. Well, now you're...
Well, now that we're 10K producers,
executive producers.
Contributors, yeah.
It's perfectly reasonable for us to make that case.
So, in the film news this month, a couple of weeks ago, a week and a half ago, Cannes 2024 lineup's been
lineup
announced.
Lineup was announced, wasn't it? Yeah.
I think there's still more to come, perhaps, but there's some exciting snippets in there. We're going to have a look at some of those.
We were going to have just a quick... chat about, well, what is the Cannes Film Festival?
Yeah.
Because it's very different to what the Oscars and the Academy Awards are and the BAFTAs, all that stuff that we have in the early part of the year. This is sort of like...
That feels like the end of the film year, that, doesn't it, looking back?
And Cannes is about showing premieres of new films.
So it's like Film New Year.
Yeah.
Yes. But you can wait a long time.
And you can witness
time.
That by trying to find any information about these films. We'll talk about this, we'll talk about... I can barely get a still of some of these films. And also, there's an absolute plethora of different awards on. The big award is the Palme d'Or, the Golden Palm.
But last year, Anatomy of a Fall.
Anatomy of a Fall, yes. And a rare instance of a film that wins at Cannes getting nominated for the Academy Awards.
And same with so Zone of Interest won the Grand Prix, didn't it?
Yeah.
And it's quite unusual for something.
So as you say,
there's the
Grand Prix, there's the jury prize. There's the Un Certain Regard section, which is for
Un Certain Regard.
That's for relatively new filmmakers to have their films. And above on top of that, there is then the Best Actor Masculin and Best Actor Féminin awards. It's a Best Director and a Best Script award. I think that's as far as it goes. So it's very much like a different sort of animal to the awards. This is like looking forward.
Yeah.
And I think you put it brilliantly before.
It's like if the Oscars is the bookend, then the Cannes is the bookend at the beginning of the film year. For me.
And in between there's all this dross that comes out and you have to sort of fight your way through it. And the other thing we were saying, we get lots of the films that were winning at Cannes in 2023 are just coming out here now, aren't they? So you think,
So there's a big wait.
Yes.
The memes start here.
So we've picked out a few films that have piqued our interest then. Over to you first.
Well, this unusually, there's not going to be so long to wait for this film. And we mentioned it the other week in our trailer trash bit. So Kinds of Kindness, directed by Yorgos Lanthimos. Last film, Poor Things. And also, loved him with The Lobster, that very unusual film. Killing of a Sacred Deer, The Favourite, and Poor Things was just so massively popular last year as
well. Yeah, he's had a good run, hasn't he?
Yeah, and it's Emma Stone again, so back from Poor Things and The Favourite. And a few other familiar faces. Willem Dafoe's also in this.
He's in everything.
Yeah, he's gorgeous though. So that trailer for that dropped in March, and it's actually going to be released In America, I'm the 21st of June, and over here, I'm the 28th. So it's not as long to wait as your normal can sort of premiere. It's also got... Is he going to be
Jesse
good or
Plemons.
Bad?
Good, we're on tenterhooks. Jesse Plemons.
Jesse, bad Jesse.
God, bad
Margaret
Jesse.
Qualley as well, who is in a lot this year. So
every time you turn around, Margaret Qualley's... I was at the bus stop the other day.
Margaret Qualley's... Margaret Qualley, what are you doing? She was also in Poor Things as the sort of... When they needed another Bella to replace Bella, that was that character. She also plays the daughter in Leftovers, which I think I loved, but also Drive Away Dolls this year, which we reviewed just the other week.
Yeah.
Shall I read you the official synopsis? For
Please do.
Okay. It is a triptych fable following a man without choice who tries to take control of his own life. A policeman who is alarmed that his wife who was missing at sea has returned and seems a different person, and a woman determined to find a specific someone with a special ability who is destined to become a prodigious spiritual leader. I don't know who's who or what's what in the film, but that sounds tasty enough to me. I think filming took place in the back end of 2022. It looks intriguing. I love the trailer. Emma Stone dancing in a car park.
Again, yep. She's shaking that butt, isn't she?
I think it's got all the ingredients, hasn't it?
Yeah. It looks fascinating. Mm. Whatever it's going to be very surprising, I think. Yeah.
And not too long for us to wait either, which I'm pleased about.
A film that caught my eye was The Apprentice, which you might say, oh, what is that about Donald Trump? And you'd be, because it is about Donald Trump. It's about his years in the 70s and 80s when he was starting out as being a property developer and spent most evenings at Studio 54 with Ivana. And Ivana's in it. But much of the film seems to be about his relationship with the lawyer, Roy Cohn, who's played in the film by Jeremy Strong. Trump is being played by Sebastian Shaw. Mm-hmm. They couldn't get Alec Baldwin for legal reasons. And it looks as though this could be really interesting because Roy Cohn was one of the most evil men who ever lived.
That's Jeremy Strong.
And he worked with Senator Joseph McCarthy in the 50s at the HUAC hearings where... People were being accused of being a communist, and that was it. Their life career was over.
I hope he didn't go too method on this, because he is a bit method, isn't he?
Apparently he lives the role, yes. We were told that he used to get on Brian Cox's nerves on Succession, where I think it was a bit like Dustin Hoffman and Laurence Olivier on Marathon Man, where Olivier's like, dear boy, can't you just act?
I don't know. Jeremy Strong. I think. Do you think his character is going to be sort of likely to be the lead in it rather than the Trump? Because he's not going
to. It might be. Because he seems to be the person who is grooming Trump to be this monster that he's turned into.
It sounds like it could be quite intense.
Yeah, yeah. So that's another one that. Caught my eye was a new film from Andrea Arnold, Bird. And I know hardly anything about this apart from the fact that Barry Keoghan and Franz Rogowski is in it.
I think narratively, I think Barry Keoghan plays, he's the father of a young
girl
woman,
or something.
Young girl,
it seems
falls
like.
In love with the from,
And it's set in Kent. And it's like—is
it contemporary? I think it is.
Yeah. I've seen one photo of Barry Keoghan on a motorbike, and his torso, and it's covered in tattoos.
Ooh.
Mm. So there you go. And it looks as though it's going to have that look and feel of Arnold's like British social realist films. And if you think of how Fish Tank. Looked. You know, it was in some pretty grim surroundings, but she brings out a certain beauty to it. And also her short film, Wasp, which was shot all around where she's originally from, Dartford in Kent. So I think it could be really interesting.
Yeah.
And talking about Wasp, Did you know that is the only film that has won an Academy Award for Best Film that stars Danny Dyer?
Danny Dyer. The Regent.
Okay,
Danny
it's Academy
Dyer.
Award for Best Short Film, but if you phrase the question right, Danny Dyer.
Yeah.
And he's great. He is great.
Well,
in
his
it as
mentor
well.
Was Harold Pinter.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's Boyd.
Well, I was intrigued by The Substance. French filmmaker Coralie Farge, sorry if that's not pronounced right. I haven't seen the film Revenge, but apparently that was quite bloody. And it's described as a feminist body horror. But it stars Margaret Qualley, again.
Who?
Demi Moore and Ray Liotta.
So Demi.
Demi. Demi. That looks quite intriguing. And David Cronenberg's in competition as well with The Stroud. Don't know much about that, but
no,
that's David
his
Cronenberg.
Last film, Crimes of the Future, was an astonishing return.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't so much a return to form, but someone actually giving him some money to go and make a film.
And of course, he's Daddy Cronenberg now because his kids are both.
Amazingly,
yeah.
Some of his children are now directing films.
What else? There's one other thing that I was looking at, not in competition, but. So Naomi Merlant, who is the actress who featured in Portrait of a Lady on Fire and Tar more recently, she's directed Les Femmes au Balcon, or The Balconettes, which looks like three women stuck in an apartment during a heatwave. But it's co-written by her and Celine Sharma, who directed her in Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Yes.
That's a midnight screening at the Cannes Festival. So
I love midnight. I love midnight screenings at festivals. They're always going to be a bit edgy.
Yeah, we don't get a lot of French comedy over here. I don't think it translates over very well.
Well, when you think of how little European cinema we actually get in this country, I know you would imagine that there would be far more access via digital means of seeing foreign language films.
Yeah.
You know, not that they have to be award winners or, but you know, just like Common or Garden, you say like French comedies.
Yeah. Just everyday stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's just a chip off the block of what's in the competition. We haven't even mentioned Megalopolis.
No.
But this has to be the third week in a row that we've mentioned Francis Ford Coppola. But for slightly more cheery reasons than that.
Yeah, that's going to be premiered, hasn't it? And this is his film has been his lifelong ambition. And it's, again, I can't find I can find one image, a title image for it. It's supposed to be like the culmination of his life's work. Surprisingly, he doesn't seem to have an American distributor yet. But I'm sure, well, I certainly hope they'll be fawning over it once it's actually been seen. So I'm immensely intrigued and excited as to what it might be.
Well, that's the 77th edition of Cannes, and that kicks off May the 14th to May the 25th.
I'm sure we're going to end up coming back to as we find out more about the films that are on. Some more music?
Yeah. What you got?
Okay. We've got Divine.
Oh.
Or Glenn Milstead, as his real name was, the muse of John Waters, you could call her when she's she made a number of great disco records during the 80s and 90s. She even had a big hit here, You Think You're a Man.
You're a man, but you're only a boy.
But this is from her original disco album. And I'm going to play the opening track, which for me is one of the... I might have this played at my funeral.
Oh, I'll make a note of that, Martin.
So you could... some of the lyrics are just wonderful. And I think, once heard, you'll never forget T-shirts and tight blue jeans.
Mm. We'll be right back.
Lift them weights. You work out, I palpitate. To coin a phrase, you're the cat's meow. And I'm the dog, so bow, wow, wow.
T-shirts.
Boots, hard hats, patches on the seams. Wham, bam, thank you, Sam. T-shirts, tight blue jeans.
Ha! T-shirts and tight blue jeans. T-shirts. T-shirts and tight blue jeans. T-shirts. I like it, I like it. T-shirts and tight blue jeans. T-shirts. T-shirts.
That was Divine and T-shirts and tight blue jeans. And amazingly, you're listening to The Film Show on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM and on digital and online if you want to catch up later. And it's review time. It Ooh. Says here.
It yes. says here, yeah, it must be.
Do you want to go first?
Oh, or... I'm going first, am I? Shall I
bring No, it's up to you. Do you
want to... Yeah, I don't mind. Yeah. I went to see Book of Clarence last night.
All right.
Today. So what's the Book of Clarence? So it's... I'm in that middling ground of did I like it, did I not. So it's James Samuel, director, who we last saw. His debut feature film was opened at the London Film Festival in 2021, The Harder They Fall, which was like a Western action, violent, a lot of fun. This is set in Jerusalem, AD 33. So Lakeith Stanfield plays sort of a bit of a chancer, a bit of a ducker and diver, drug dealer, who sees a bit of what Jesus has got going on, the Messiah and the following, and he's like, I want a bit of that. Thanks very much. But it becomes... So it starts off quite fun, and there are some really, really good central and supporting performances in this that make it very likeable. It's difficult not to like a film with Lakeith Stanfield. He's so engaging. He's so... There's something about him, screen quality-wise, that I really like. It also features Omar Sy, who is a French actor who I know from playing the Gentleman Thief in the French TV series Lupin.
Oh.
And he's
that was a great series, and he was great in it.
So he plays Barabbas, the immortal slave, who is freed by Clarence.
Yep.
And it's sort of Clarence's journey to a bit of redemption, really. And it gets muddied in between other characters who could be the real Jesus, could be another version of Jesus, all around at the same time.
Yeah.
And he becomes mixed up in all of this. And he becomes mixed up in James McAvoy's Pontius Pilate wanting to get rid of all of the messiahs that are knocking up. Apparently they're all over the place in Jerusalem AD 33. Beautiful performance from Marianne Jean-Baptiste as his mother. It's got a general vibe about it that's kind of 70s, 80s black American cinema.
Yes.
Yeah. It's looks beautiful, but like just for me, the last third of the film, maybe I'm a bit too atheist for it. And maybe it just got very earnest, very quickly. And I can't rate it or slate it. Because it's worth seeing for the performances alone. Yeah. And it is a bit long, just knocking over 2 hours. I could have done with a bit shorter, but I can't rate it or slate it. But it's worth checking out at some point.
Okay,
that's my.
Well, I think you also went to see this Teacher's Lounge. A German film directed by, and I think this might be the right way to pronounce it, Ilka Chatak. And this wasn't what I was expecting it to be.
No.
This is set in a German secondary school where there have been some thefts in the school, and it's about a new teacher who comes into this environment and has to try and find a way about how the school works and starts seeing some practices and whatnot going on that she's not that comfortable with. And then something happens which changes everything and the film goes with. I don't think I've felt as tense in a cinema for ages as what I did with this. This was like a full-on hardcore thriller.
Yeah, they ramp it up. I noticed that some of the music and the sound really ramps it up, and you find there's nowhere to go, is there, either? It's all set in the school.
And well, the other thing I was going to say, I don't think there was a scene that was outside the school, and the camera's sort of weaving around, following this young teacher around the school, and there's this like screeching string score, just like plucked strings that are very, very tense. And the other thing about it, I think, which made it so difficult for you to step back from, it was shot in Academy 4:3, old square telly size. So everything was like very, very focused in on her. And as these events take place, her world just starts crumbling around her, doesn't it?
Mm.
And it's different problems with the children, with the parents, with the other school staff.
She starts off quite idealistic, doesn't she? And with absolutely the best interest of her students at heart. And
it all gets... the waters get very, very muddied. Mm. And the ending was very, very ambiguous. Mm. But I liked that. Hour and 40 minutes as well. But I thought this was superb, really, really superb, and I'd give it a solid rate.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too, yeah, definitely.
There you go. So we've got two bits of TV to talk about from this week.
Shall we start with The Fallout? You watched some of that, didn't
you? Started watching it, but you tell us what you thought of it.
I binged the whole lot. It's very Moorish, very watchable. I am not a gamer, as news to nobody, I would have thought, but it's an adaptation of a game, but very, very popular game. It's a nuclear fallout, so we're in post-apocalyptic California, but it's not quite what you think when you start. There's a little bit more to discover. There's some bloody gory fun fights in it as well.
Like I've seen three episodes and there's,
It's based around three characters' journey, I suppose. You've got Ella Purnell, British actress, playing Lucy, who has grown up underground in one of what they call the vaults. She's from Vault 33. And the whole thing kicks off with her, the definition of her is definitely plucky, perky. confident.
As they all seem to be down in the vault, isn't it? Yeah.
But her mission is to go and rescue her father, played by Kyle MacLachlan, who is the overseer of this vault, when basically they're taken over by raiders. And so she goes up to the surface to find her father, but she finds out a lot more than she bargained for. So she's never been up above on the surface. You've got Walton Goggins, brilliantly named, who plays Cooper Howard, who's
He was one of the stars of Justified, and he was fantastic in that.
He plays a ghoul, which basically means he survived from about two. We're looking at 200 years after, or plus, of a nuclear bomb. He was a TV star. It looks very 50s, but it's not quite 50s, you find out. And his wife is high up in this sinister organization called Vault-Tec, who set up all the vaults in the first place. And then you've got Aaron Clifton playing the third main character of Maximus, who is like a trying to. He's survived one Holocaust, and he is trying to fight his way to glory. And they're all on a mission to find a decapitated head.
Yes,
yeah.
I'm going to keep going with it, but I don't know.
I think it's only 8 episodes. It's on Amazon Prime.
Yeah,
it is. It's got a massive budget, and they've just announced this week that there's going to be a second series.
Surely don't. Yeah.
Which I'm sort of relieved about, because the amount of times you'll get to the end of the series and go, yeah, I'm not doing any more.
Yeah.
I don't know how does it work? How do they make money on that? I know they've started advertising on Prime, but
I think is, do they get more people subscribing if they want to watch that?
Well, it's the budget for this series alone was 153 million. And considering what it's looking at, the show in general, is a bit of a satire of corporate America and why things happen. So it's like, they've got all this money. It looks amazing. And I think there's lots in it for people that know the game and people that don't. So I've got no idea of the game, and I can find stuff in it. And people that know the game, there must be all sorts of Easter eggs plotted in there for them.
As I say, I started watching, but I think one of the things that I trailed off about it was that I ended up watching Baby Reindeer, which is it's on Netflix. It's a comedy show, a British show, which turned out to be one of the most disturbing things I've seen in quite a long time. It's written by Richard Gadd, and it's based on a one-man show that he did. And it's I'll be quite brief about this, but he's an aspiring comedian who works in a bar. This woman walks in, Martha, and she starts stalking him, and it seems quite funny and all that to start off with. Then she gets his phone number, she gets his email, she starts turning up at his gigs. It goes into some very, very dark places, and I'm not even getting on to the fact that Donnie, Richard Gadd's character, starts being sexually abused by someone who's supposedly collaborating with him on a comedy script.
So I read an interview with him.
And this is based on something that actually happened to him.
Oh gosh,
it's like he's. So if you feel you're up to it, it's 7 half-hour-ish episodes. I'd say give it a whirl. But don't blame me.
Take it slowly.
that's
on Netflix.
Right, we need to get on with some more music, and we're going to go with a selection from Anna Karina's 1968 French TV spectacular. Anna, I spent a lot of time thinking up the name for that. And this is very rock and rolly, Roller Girl.
l'amour en trompe-l'œil. La décale comme un nigger. Le danger immédiat. Et l'amour fiction, je suis la roller girl.
Roller Girl by Anna Karina there, and you're listening to the film show on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM, digital and online. And a quick romp through some screenings that might be of interest and a few things starting next week. At the very wonderful Parkway Cinema in Barnsley tomorrow afternoon, you can catch up with Dune 2, but in 70mm. I'm hoping to go along and talk to them at the Parkway in a few weeks' time. You've really got to keep an eye on what's on there because it's a fantastic independent cinema.
That's your birthday treat to you,
I think it is, yeah. Yes, it will be. I saw Oppenheimer there a few weeks back on 70mm. It's a really lovely cinema and really enthusiastic staff. So, yes, keep an eye on what's on there, but I'll be there tomorrow afternoon. I did make a quick mention of the IMAX weekend at Cineworld, which is all taking place today. All tickets are £3, and they're showing a Super Mario Brothers movie, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, the latest Hunger Games film, and Oppenheimer. So, if you fancy going to see something on a big screen on the cheap, get along to Cineworld Sheffield today.
And a little bit more central in Sheffield, Boy Kills World is out at the Light on Friday. Challengers, which is the tennis, Zendaya, Josh O'Connor and another young man. Lots of young people playing sports and having sex, I think it looks like from the trailer. Omen is on at the showroom, and That They May Face the Rising Sun, an Irish film, is starting on Friday as well at the showroom, which I'm hopefully going to get time to check out. But checking out on the show this week, our last track that Martin's picked for us is from a film I absolutely love, but I've only watched it once. It's one of those ones where I bought the DVD and I can't wait to watch it again, but it's on the list of rewatch. But listening to this track again has made me think I'm definitely going to give this a check out. Robert Pattinson sings with the Tindersticks, Willow from High Life.
Bye-bye.
We'll see you next week.
Standing still, Willow. Are we rushing forward? Are we standing still, Willow? Are we rushing forward, always standing still.